By the way, I guess I didn't say I will call the meeting of the Civil Law Data Practices Committee to order. The first order of business would be the approval of the minutes, if I could find them. Yeah, well, they were on top at one point. Representative Powell, would you like to move the minutes?
Absolutely. So moved, Madam Chair.
Discussion. Seeing none, all those in favor of the minutes, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Minutes are approved. The first bill we have this morning, we have Representative Fabian. Representative Lunan, would you like to move House File 985, that it be referred to the General Register?
So moved, Madam Chair.
House File 985 is before us. Representative Fabian, to your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee, and happy Valentine's Day to you, too. I did make sure that my wife is getting flowers today.
Nice.
And I sent her a text early this morning to make sure that I wished her happy Valentine's Day.
Good for
so,
you.
Madam Chair and members, House File 985 is a bill that I actually keep authored in the previous biennium. For whatever reason, it didn't get acted on in either chamber. But I'm hopeful that this year we can move the bill through the legislative process and get a governor's signature on this. My motivation for being the chief author in this bill was interesting, and this is a rehash for some of you. A few years ago, a friend of mine who's a CPA asked me about the property that I own, which of course is very small. It's 40 acres hunting land. And he says, how do you have that legally organized? And I said, I don't know what you're talking about. And so then he talked about an LLC and passing it on to my kids and all that and stuff that even today I don't understand. But he talked to me about the risk of liability. And when the opportunity came to author this bill and support this bill, I took a look at what it's trying to accomplish in terms of protecting landowners. And I thought, this is something that is kind of near and dear to me. So that's why I'm the chief author of the bill. What we would like to do here is basically protect landowners from what I would consider to be frivolous lawsuits. And for the details of the bill, I would like to turn to Mr. Bob Johnson here to go through it and explain kind of the legal ins and outs of this. I'm not an attorney, but I do obviously support and like the general idea. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Fabian. Mr. Johnson, go ahead and state your name for the record and go on with your testimony.
Madam Chair and committee members, Bob Johnson, Insurance Federation of Minnesota, but I'm also the board chair of Minnesotans for Lawsuit Reform, and that's an organization of 65,000-plus Minnesota employers, primarily trade associations and chambers of commerce throughout the state. So it's a very large group of virtually everybody in the business community as part of this organization, all the major business groups. House File 985 is a very important bill, and we just urge your support and passage for it this year. It protects longstanding liability rules that have been established by the Minnesota courts. Minnesota, like most states around the country, a land possessor and property owner does not owe a duty of care to trespassers, thieves, burglars, the people on property that shouldn't be on it, except in very narrow and well-defined circumstances that the Minnesota courts have delineated through the decades. I can go into the exceptions if depending on what the committee would like on that, but the point is that our courts and where the case law, the common law of Minnesota sits today, is in the place that we support, and we want to keep it in that place. And I'll state why now. The bill's needed to what we describe as codify, to put into law what the courts have decided through the years, these traditional common law rules. And the reason is to preempt, or to put in law, preempt our courts from adopting a specific provision. It's Section 51 of the American Law Institute Restatement of Torts, 3rd edition. And all of that is to say, so what is the restatement of torts? What's the American Law Institute? So the American Law Institute is a gathering of law professors and practitioners and judges who, there's no set time frame, but they put together these lengthy treatises, books about areas of the law, the restatement of contracts, restatement of torts. And they're very influential with the courts. And my short description of what they're, and I am a licensed attorney, so I'm familiar with these restatement of torts and contracts and what the American Law Institute is. It's very influential treaties that's put together to, frankly, recommend what's the best law in these various areas of law. It's just a multitude of chapters, and there is a chapter in the Restatement of Torts, third edition, that deals with the liability of property or landowners to trespassers. And the third edition changed the recommendation from what the second and the first edition recommended in that specific area of law. And in fact, it changed it very significantly to suggest that the best law is that landowners owe a duty of reasonable care to all entrants on their land, so everybody, including trespassers. And so that's significant. That's very significant because the net effect of that, if that were to be adopted by the Minnesota courts, is that it would dramatically expand trespassers' rights to sue landowners, property owners, residential homeowners, farmers who want own property. Are we paranoid? Is this something that we shouldn't be worried about? We should be worried about, because there's a history in our Minnesota courts, and it can be proven that our appellate courts, our Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, in fact, looks to documents like the Restatement of Torts, third edition, and significant law has been made and decisions made that have adopted new law, if you will, through the courts, through the influence of this group. So our concern is it's very narrow. It's specific. We're not paranoid. In fact, since this came out, this third edition, one state Supreme Court out in Nevada changed their common law and adopted and impose this new duty. And my comment would be that, you know, if our courts were to do that, and I don't know that they're going to do that, I'm not here to testify that they are, but this is a significant enough issue, and the level of concern is not a paranoia about what could happen, it has happened. And so we believe it's very important to let's, on this one narrow specific area, let's make certain that we don't stray off and have adopted a new law in Minnesota, if you will, that property owners owe a duty of care to trespassers, people who are not supposed to be on your land. And as I indicated up front, there are narrow and well-defined circumstances where there is a duty of care. So there's a number of cases. If the committee's interested, I could recite some of those, some of the specific areas. We're not changing any of that. And so, and are we alone in our concerns? We're not alone in our concerns. And I don't know that we got it in the packet, and I apologize if we didn't, but we have a map that's coloring in the states. You can kind of just see the colors of the states. There's a lot of states that have acted to respond to, frankly, head off the concerns in this one narrow area. And as the legislatures around the country have acted on this, we've got a sheet that just shows the votes. So, you know, this is not major tort reform. In fact, we're keeping the law in Minnesota exactly as it is today. We're keeping the law exactly as it is today. So that's the net effect of the bill. But as the legislatures around the country have acted on it, not all of them, but most of them have been votes like the Virginia vote, 98-0, 33-0 votes in the, that's the West Virginia, but the Virginia-Michigan votes, 37-0 in the Senate, 105-4 in the House. I'm just saying that in states, both blue and red states that have acted, there's been not quite, but near unanimous votes in their House and the Senate when this similar kind of bill has been presented. So that's the reason for the bill, the response around the country. We believe it's important in this one narrow area. This is a very, it is a unique bill. It is a unique bill, and I don't think you usually see a bill like this. I haven't. I've been around a lot of years working these issues where we actually write into statute codifying Minnesota's common law. In other words, we're freezing it in this area, this one specific area about duty of care of a property or a possessor of land to trespassers. So that's, you know, so that's the wording of the bill. It codifies that very principle. We need it for the reasons I stated, Madam Chair. Urge the committee's support for House File 985 today, and be happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Just real quick before we go to the next testifier, could you just put on the record the areas of where a current landowner has a duty of care and responsibility to trespassers? Could you just kind of put that on the record?
Has that seen that? I'll give three that I have right in front of me, and I won't give cases, but I have the citations for them if the committee wants to hear it. Once a trespasser's presence is discovered, a possessor of real property must warn the trespasser of risks or dangers possessed by the land possessor's activities. So that's one. If the possessor is aware that trespassers constantly intrude upon one portion of your property, then the owner has to warn about dangerous artificial conditions at that location that are known to the property owner but would not likely be discovered by the trespasser. So that's the actual wording out of the opinion. And when I said they're narrow and well-defined, the third one is that there could be liability for harm to a children trespasser if the property owner knows that there are children on a part of the property that they're not supposed to be. So, and they have to warn them of a dangerous artificial condition of the land that the child did not appreciate but was known or should have been known by the possessor. So the point is that in that instance with children on the property, there is a duty of care to the children that are you know, on the property in that manner. So those are three specific cases that our Supreme Court has decided that find a duty of care. So we're not changing any of those. So to whatever extent our courts have created duties of care today, House File 985 keeps all of those same duties of care. It's truly intended to preempt in that one area in adopting this Section 51 of the Restatement of Torts.
Thank you. And what I'd like to do, members, I just wanted to get that question out in the open, but I'd like to hear from all the testifiers before we go to a lot of member questions. But if you have some brief ones, we can hit them now. Representative Lesh, you were first, and then I'll get to Representative.
Oh, Madam Chair, I think that's probably a good idea. Let's hold off until we hear from everyone.
Okay. All right. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to know if there's any current pending cases that would change that definition pending at this time.
Madam Chair, Mr. Johnson. Representative Hillstrom, I'm not aware of any.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So have you looked to see if there's any pending, or just no one has come up to you and said, hey, there would be
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I have not looked.
Representative Hillstrom, okay. All right, thank you, Mr. Johnson. Our next testifier, Ryan Hamilton. On deck, Joel Carlson. Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record and go on with your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Ryan Hamilton. I'm the Associate Legal Counsel for the Minnesota Association of Realtors. We're a trade association with over 18,000 members at this point. And our primary service we provide is assisting homeowners, aspiring homeowners, and home sellers shepherding through their real estate transaction. But when we're over here at the Capitol, whenever we're appropriate, we try to advocate for policies that will preserve private property rights and just sustainable home ownership in terms of costs and burdens. You know, I had some prepared remarks, but this bill and the story actually hits home for me personally. I live in North Minneapolis, Senator Champion's district. Former Senator Higgins lives in our neighborhood, and it's a neighborhood in transition. We have a lot of homeowners coming in, fixing up the properties, and we have a very close-knit community in terms of this listserv we have. It's a Google group. We exchange. We look out for each other. That's what we do. Just last week, we got an email from one of our neighbors who was working on a duplex, and they said the downstairs is vacant, and they said, hey, somebody broke into our empty unit. And so just the shock of when you, as a homeowner and a neighbor, when you hear, like, that your space has been invaded, you know, and it's the emotion of that. And just to, if these risks that Mr. Johnson are true, to get hit with that, and then weeks later get a nasty gram from an attorney that said, hey, that person that broke into your home is now suing you for some reason, that's the type of conversation and that we don't want to have with homeowners, you know, as realtors are saying. So, you know, I just wanted to stay brief, but it is a, I just wanted to give you that homeowner aspect of the consequences of this, and we think this is great legislation just to protect our private property rights. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Carlson. And on deck, Mike Steenson.
Fabian in the middle here.
Oh. A sandwich. Fabian sandwich.
Have a chair. Fabian Mike Steenson.
Please introduce yourself for the record, Mr. Carlson.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. Happy Valentine's Day. I'm sure I'll be feeling the love by the end of the day. I'm going to let Professor Steenson go first and then just have some very brief closing comments about the bill and its genesis and our genuine concerns about it. I think you're going to hear a significantly different story about the status of the law in Minnesota, and when we're done with that, we'll just kind of wrap it up after Professor Steenson. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Professor Steenson, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Mike Steenson. I'm a professor of law at Mitchell-Hamlin School of Law. One of my areas of expertise is tort law. I'm also a member of the American Law Institute and have fairly intimate knowledge of how the of how that particular group works. I want to provide some background for this bill, although previous speakers have done a very good job of doing that. As noted, this would prevent Minnesota courts from adopting one particular provision of the third restatement of torts. That would be Section 52 for the third restatement, which would allow flagrant trespassers to recover from a landowner who caused injury to that trespasser. All right. Excuse me. Now, just a little bit of background before I discuss the American Law Institute and the Restatement of Torts. Common law is judge-made law. In the English tradition, it goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. Judges decide what the basic rules are that govern people's conduct. In general, a rule of negligence law applies to people in ordinary day-to-day activities. Where people create a foreseeable risk of injury, then they're subject to liability under a negligence theory. Negligence is just simply the failure to use reasonable care under the circumstances. That standard applies when you're rushing to get to your early morning hearing, driving down the freeway. It applies if you're a property owner. And that has been the law for the most part in Minnesota for 45 years. Generally, landowners owe a duty of reasonable care to people who sustain injury on their property. There are all sorts of exceptions to that rule, and it's not by any means anything approaching absolute liability. Now, Minnesota Supreme Court has created or maintained, I should say, a separate rule for trespassers, as previously noted. Trespassers, for that matter, entrants on land, don't recover automatically whenever there's an injury. There are layers of defenses that landowners have regularly assert, and it's extremely difficult for people to recover in premises liability cases. Even if there's a duty of reasonable care to landowners have a defense that the danger is obvious. If you slip and fall on an icy sidewalk, you know it's an icy sidewalk. Well, you live in Minnesota. So sometimes recovery would be barred because the danger is open and obvious. If that doesn't work, sometimes courts will say, well, plaintiff pretty clearly understood what the risk was and assumed the risk in the primary sense, and if that doesn't work, there's a defense of contributory negligence. You just should have known better. And that might either reduce or bar the recovery by the plaintiff. Premises liability cases are fiercely defended. They're very difficult cases for injured persons to win, and it's more difficult for trespassers. There's no general duty of due care for trespassers. Now, the third restatement of torts is a culmination of years of work on the part of the American Law Institute. The American Law Institute is an elected body. There are a little bit less than 2,000 members nationwide. 68 of those members come from the state of Minnesota. They include judges, federal judges, Supreme Court justices, including the Chief Justice, lawyers, and law professors. It's an elected position. It's a great honor to be a member of the American Law Institute. This is a deliberate body, very much like a legislative body, except you have to react much more quickly than the restatement or than the American Law Institute. The provisions of the American Law Institute are adopted over a long, long period of time. The first restatement of torts was adopted by the American Law Institute in 1934. The second restatement of torts in 1965. The third restatement of torts relevant to landowners' duties was adopted in 2010. It took between 5 to 10 years for this very careful, very deliberative, highly intelligent body to adopt the basic rules with respect to the restatement of torts. Now, that said, courts, when they see the restatements, and as noted, they're highly influential, courts are not by any means required to adopt them, those provisions. Courts will pick and choose. Minnesota Supreme Court on many occasions has adopted various provisions for the restatements of torts, including restatements that govern landowners' duties. In fact, Minnesota was really ahead of the curve. 45 years ago, the Minnesota Supreme Court liberalized rules to some extent relevant to landowners' duties. That position was adopted, again, 45 years later in 2010 by the third restatement of torts. Now, courts are free to adopt some or all of the restatements, and that happens on a regular basis. The Minnesota Supreme Court has relied very heavily on the restatements of torts. Now, the law with respect to trespassers, and that's really where the focus of this hearing is, the law with respect to trespassers is such that it's very difficult for trespassers to recover. And the reason is very simple. Landowners ordinarily don't have to expect trespassers to be on their property. Well, what about all of the recreational users who might come onto someone's property? Snowmobilers, cross-country skiers? Well, the legislature, years ago, adopted a recreational use statute. In fact, it's set out just in the preceding sections from where House File 985 would be. So Minnesota's recreational use statute in Section 604A.201 provides recreational use immunity for people who own land where recreational users come out of that property. Absent recreational use statutes, generally, there's no duty of reasonable care that's going to be owed to a landowner. So the rules, common law rules, as they already exist, are not user-friendly. All right, so why not embed that in the common law? If you embed that particular rule in the common law, then, of course, the Minnesota Supreme Court would be unable to adopt Section 52 of the Third Restatement of Torts. But first, what the court would have to do is to say, well, we're going to treat trespassers the same as every other entrant on land, and what the court would have to do is to take that position in the face of 45 years and more of precedent that severely limits the right of trespassers to recover. Minnesota Supreme Court is not likely to do that, but if they did, it wouldn't necessarily have to adopt the flagrant trespasser rule. This flagrant trespasser rule in Section 52 of the restatement would provide that landowners owe no duty to people who are on property for various sorts of reasons, and courts would have flexibility to formulate a rule. But criminals who come on to property to burglarize a house and then break a leg because a kid left a skateboard in the driveway would not be entitled to recover. They're currently not entitled to recover. They wouldn't be entitled to recover under Section 52 of the restatement. So, by no means, even if the Minnesota Supreme Court adopted that position, which I would be highly doubtful of, even if they did, it's not a free pass to trespassers in general. But there's a danger in freezing the common law. And I'll give you just one example. There's a tragic case. It was decided by the Minnesota Court of Appeals on July 11th of 2016. Senogles versus Carlson. that involved a near drowning by four-year-old Sean, whose grandmother brought him to a family party, and because she had to go to the hospital for medical reasons, she left him in the care, she thought, of her brother. All right. Well, the child went missing. They found him sometime later, face down in the Mississippi River. He didn't drown, but he suffered severe brain damage. He survives on a ventilator and with a feeding tube. The Minnesota Court of Appeals held that the defendant owed no duty to him, relying on one of the restatement provisions relating to trespassing children. The court said that under that particular provision, because the danger of drowning should have been apparent to a four-year-old, barred recovery. Even though the child was not a trespasser, it relied on a provision of trespasser law in Minnesota to bar recovery. All right, so that case is on appeal to the Minnesota Supreme Court. It's been argued. We're waiting decision. The court may reverse it, or the court may not. But the point is that if you freeze law, you freeze bad law as well as good law. And there's a significant danger in taking away that kind of flexibility that common law courts have to resolve these kinds of situations on a case-by-case basis. And I'll stop there. I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Mr. Carlson, do you want to go ahead first?
Sure. Well, Madam Chair, I'm not going to follow that explanation of the law. And I'm certain that, like me, when I first heard it, my head's spinning a little bit. But when I look at the ALEC Tort Reform Boot Camp, where this bill came from, it's on page 36 if you're following along at home. It encourages legislatures to freeze the law. And on page 33, they have a provision that would freeze all common law, not just on trespassers. And they don't want to subject Minnesota landowners to newfangled liability. And it also cautions legislators to try and tailor this law, this 985, to their own states. I think it's telling that Minnesota adopted the very principle that ALEC is seeking to avoid some 45 years ago, as Professor Steenson indicated in a case called Peterson versus Blaylock. And if you look at lines 1.7 and 1.8, you are actually freezing in law the 1972 case law that Minnesota adopted. And that's exactly what you're trying to preclude with this bill. Now, I don't want you to think or leave you with the impression that because it may freeze a law that's been in place for 45 years in Minnesota that we somehow support it, because we don't. We believe in the separation of powers. We believe in the inherent ability of judicial review. And we don't believe that the legislature should freeze the common law. If I appeared before you and I said, I want you to freeze the law on pick an issue, abortion rights, privacy, freeze insurance rates, you would laugh me and shoo me off of this witness podium. But that's exactly what you're being asked to do here. And this model law, I think, is extremely unclear as to what it does. We have consequences that we can't explain. And I just believe that this needs more attention, Madam Chair, to really understand what this law does. And to point that out as clearly as I can, if you look at lines 1.13 and 1.14, we have a new definition. A person in control of the land. Now, I know what a tenant, a life estate, a lessee, an occupant, a utility easement, I know what those people are. But who is a person in control of the land? Is that protesters that have occupied the property? They are in control of that land. Is that who we're trying to say is protected by this bill? Or are we going to allow the courts to decide that in a bill where you're freezing their ability to interpret the law? I really think we need to look at what we're really trying to accomplish here. We do not have a rash of cases, Madam Chair and members, as it relates to trespasser liability. We don't have criminals bringing cases in Minnesota to seek recovery when they've been injured from their own illegal conduct. We know this is an ALEC model bill, and I And I trust Representative Fabian's explanation, and I've had the chance to talk with him about this bill on more than one occasion. But the idea of I don't want to be held accountable when trespassers are on my land is already the law in Minnesota. And if you want to somehow change that, that's a different bill. This freezes in law the very problem that Representative Fabian is trying to address, which is a landowner's duty and obligation. This does not do that. This freezes in law what's been in place for over 45 years in Minnesota. So my position is you are actually perpetuating what you seek to cure with this bill. And I would just urge you to thoroughly consider, you know, what this bill actually does and who it impacts, particularly as it relates to trespassing children, as Professor Steenson indicated. Thank you, Madam Chair, and we're happy to answer questions.
Mr. Carlson, I want to address this ALEC issue that keeps, you know, ALEC seems to be the big boogeyman, and they seem to be the authors of all things awful that the right side of the aisle, you know, comes up with. So we have a list right here of everybody that's in support of this bill. Do you think that the Winona Area Chamber of Commerce is familiar with ALEC?
Madam Chairman, beyond that, I would venture to say, and I work with local chambers around the state with cities that I represent, I would venture to say that there isn't a single person on that Chamber of Commerce that even understands what House File 985 even does. That's a list that's prepared by the Insurance Federation to say, do you support legal reform? Well, of course I do. Do you want no frivolous cases? None of us do. That's what that list is. I can assure you that there isn't a person on that chamber that understands what the implications of this bill are. And so that listing, to me, is our businesses, which I support, that have signed a letter that said we support legal reform. But it doesn't mean that they understand or even know about this bill. And the reason that I bring up ALEC is because when you look at the states that have adopted this particular provision, it absolutely follows this ALEC model bill. And I don't say that it starts off with a negative presumption simply because it was generated from ALEC. That's not my point. But the talking points, the issue, is all developed through the American Legislative Exchange Council, and we know that, and that's how we can follow it. So we do look at what those intentions are. And my point about raising ALEC is that they caution legislators to look at what the law is in your state, and I don't think that's happened here. Because I don't think if you went to those very same people and asked, would you codify the law in Minnesota that's a forerunner to the restatement of torts, they'd probably say no. Don't freeze that one.
Representative Fabian, did you bring this bill because you read it in an ALEC brochure somewhere or went to an ALEC conference?
Madam Chair, thank you. No, I did not. You know, I've heard a little bit about ALEC. I've seen some emails and so forth, but not the motivation for my bringing this bill forward whatsoever. And with regards to the discussion about ALEC, quite frankly, if somebody in the room knows this much about ALEC, I know just a little bit less. Thank you.
We'll get some member questions now. Representative Lesh, and then Representative Howell and Peel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would note that if this were the carrying the water of any other organization, I don't think it would be brought up, because this isn't the first time that your caucus has gotten in trouble by carrying water for ALEC. There are plenty of other organizations out there that have model bills they put forth, and ALEC is constantly on the far right wing of pushing bills that your members don't necessarily all get. I'm not going to go down the line and ask questions if each one of your members really understands the implications of this bill, Madam Chair. But the problem, that's what happens when you carry bills like this from ALEC. And this list right here that purportedly is really the supporters, what I call the bowling alley list. This is Mr. Johnson that started out as a list of bowling alleys and has bloomed from there. Are folks that they've just gone around and probably explained it the same way. So when Mr. Hamilton came down and said, you know, I someone breaks into your house and to get a letter from an attorney that they're going to sue you because they cut themselves on the glass crawling through your broken window, and we don't want that to happen. Let's pass this ALEC bill. You already heard from Professor Steenson that that doesn't happen. It's not going to happen in Minnesota. It's ridiculous, but that's the same way. I'm sure it's the same way Mr. Johnson got all these people to sign on to the bowling alley list. There's stories like that that are far afield. So if I can, Madam Chair, let me ask this question of Professor Steenson. You had stated that the 2010 Third Restatement of Torts, Section 52, addresses with flagrant trespassers. Is that correct?
Professor Steenson.
Madam Chair, I'm going to represent the vice. Yes, that's correct. Flagrant trespassers is the rule under this new Section 52 of the Third Restatement of Torts. And Restatement of Torts, by the way, will set out in basic black letter provisions. Flagrant trespassers don't recover, but it doesn't define that term. It says, well, we leave this up to individual courts. Assuming the court would say, we think Section 52 should be the law in this state, then it would be up to a court to follow the guidance of the comments in the restatement to decide who a flagrant trespasser is. It might include someone who comes onto property. Most certainly at its base level would include a criminal. It might include somebody who comes on for improper purposes. But the restatement leaves that open for formulation on a case-by-case basis. But it most certainly doesn't open the door so that all trespassers are going to be entitled to recover.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, Professor Steenson. So would a guy who crawls through your basement window after cutting himself on glass and trying to steal your water heater or whatever he wants to take, would he be entitled to recovery potentially under current law in Minnesota if we follow the Third Restatement of Torts or existing common law?
Professor Steenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Leitch, no, under current law. Now, I can't tell you the lawsuit wouldn't be filed. There are all sorts of situations where people have been injured, usually when the homeowner is exercising a right of self-defense, but that's a different issue. But this person would be a trespasser. There would be no reason for the homeowner to anticipate the presence of the trespasser. So I think quite clearly there would not be liability under those circumstances. Under Section 52 of the Third Restatement, assuming that the Minnesota Supreme Court adopted that provision, this person would be deemed to be a flagrant trespasser because under your hypothetical, that person was there for criminal purposes. He would not be entitled to recover.
Well, Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think one of the issues here is we've all got in our own minds the bad situation that could happen and then whether or not we'd get sued for something that was not our own fault. I think that's what we're trying to avoid. But I also wonder, you know, I don't know of a single swimming pool in Minnesota that doesn't have a fence around it to keep kids from wandering into it. And under this reasoning of you bringing this bill, Representative Fabian, that's outrageous. You shouldn't have to worry about that. Well, yeah, you should. Minnesotans have kind of decided that if you put up a swimming pool, people go to the swimming pool, it could happen, and maybe there's a kid or even a vulnerable adult who wanders in there or something, you put up a fence around it. And under this reasoning, you know, that's outrageous. My property is my right. I should be able to have the pool wide open and see everything I want. Minnesotans have decided that's not the case. But let me ask another question here, Professor Steenson. So when I was working all these animal bills, there was a family that told me about where they went and got their puppy. Now, there was a person in a rural area, and they had it was word of mouth that they were selling puppies. And so this family drove there in their station wagon, and they drove down this long road based on directions and got to this location, and it was an abandoned farmhouse. The house had been condemned, but they didn't know that. And the guy that was selling the puppies was living in this trailer behind the garage, which is where you were supposed to go, but they didn't know that. So kids jumped out of the car really excited to go get the puppy. Hey, can I go knock on the door? Sure, you can go knock on the door. Kid runs up on the porch to knock on the door, falls through the rotted out porch, injures arm really badly on that. And this wasn't any about any kind of lawsuit stuff then. This was about an animal they had brought up and some of the conditions in which these animals were raised. And in this case, it was a person who was heavily involved with methamphetamine and the drug trade as well, too, and just happened to be supplementing income with puppies, too. But I thought about that when we were talking about this, and I wondered about that. In a situation like that, these people would, you know, could potentially, I don't know if this would be a flagrant trespasser or not, but certainly they were not invited to the property. There was no advertisement suggesting that they should come there that I'm selling puppies, because this was all word of mouth at the time that we go get the puppy. Can you tell me what would happen in a situation like that?
Professor Steenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesh. There are two possibilities. The children, I mean, they made a wrong turn and came onto the property, not really intending to trespass, but having no particular right to be there. They would either be classified as entrants on property or as trespassers. Under the circumstances, very likely what would happen is that unless this is some sort of a what we would call a concealed trap danger with those steps that somebody might fall through without notice, if it's a concealed trap, it probably wouldn't make any difference whether the person was a trespasser or whether the person was an entrant. The person might have a potential right to recover. But then on the other hand, there always has to be a finding of negligence on the part of the homeowner. And to show negligence, you have to show that there's a foreseeable risk of injury. Well, if you live in a trailer out in the middle of nowhere, the likelihood that people are going to come and visit is very low. Common law is flexible enough to take those sorts of situations into consideration. But there are situations where kids may well be trespassers, and something I should have pointed out earlier involves a case where the Minnesota Supreme Court actually backed away from the second restatement of torts in a case involving injury to a trespassing child. Now, the Minnesota Supreme Court, the Minnesota courts for years have followed something called an attractive nuisance doctrine for trespassing children. Children get attracted onto property for a variety of different reasons. I mean, we were all there, right? A lot of things look pretty alluring, especially when they're on the neighbor's property. All right, so Minnesota adopted before the 19th century, or in the 19th century, at the tail end, something called the turntable doctrine. Kids were, in effect, attracted by turntables onto the property of a railroad-sustained injury. They were really, in effect, invited onto the property because of this attractive nuisance. In one form or another, that's been the law in Minnesota up to the current day. Minnesota adopted the second restatement of torts version of attractive nuisance, which does, in fact, allow children to recover. But the Minnesota Supreme Court, in a case called Croker versus Mackenhausen, a case involving resort owners' liability, backed away from that and said that just simply knowing that kids are going to trespass on property isn't enough. You have to know that they're going to trespass on the specific place where the hazard was. All right, so there are situations where courts will actually move away from what seems to be a too liberal position taken by the restatement. But in general, it just simply turns on the question of what's reasonable under the circumstances. So there, plaintiffs in your hypothetical, Representative Lesh, plaintiffs would have a possible claim.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think Professor Steenson explained pretty well why these situations can be complicated, and it's worthwhile to have a judge look at them to determine where fault should actually lie. But I would just note that because an ALEC or whoever decides to carry an ALEC bill decides that, no, none of that reasonableness is warranted, we decide what's going to happen. The last time I remember one of your members getting in trouble with this was Representative Gottwell, who got caught on the floor saying, yes, this was my bill, and it just happened to be a verbatim ALEC bill, and he wasn't really sure what happened, and there were some tragic results that occurred from that bill in years after, and he really wasn't able to adequately explain it. And that could very easily happen in this instance as well. And I think the criticism based on the fact that this comes from ALEC is well warranted because they have a track record of being heavy-handed like this and ham-fisted. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Lesh, I don't know what kind of trouble you think folks are in for carrying certain bills, but that be it that as it may, I got two short questions, and One of them happens to be for the professor, Madam Chair, and that is the, and I can't quite get it, it's the American Legislative, whoever brought the and worked on the third restatement of torts. You indicated this was an elected body, and my question is elected by whom? The public? Do you have to belong to a certain association to get elected? Do you have to belong to the bar? Do you have to go to a certain bar? Just who has the right to elect these folks?
Professor Steenson.
Madam Chair, Representative, it's membership is elected by the Council of the American Law Institute. You have to be recommended. Your recommendation has to be second recommended by an American Law Institute member. My recommender, by the way, was Justice Rosalie Wall. Then you have to have two recommenders. And if you're in academia, you have to have, hopefully, a distinguished academic record to get in. There may be a distinguished record of public service, as in the case of Chief Justice Gilday, the Minnesota Supreme Court, who is a member. Or you might be an outstanding lawyer, as is the case with, say, Tom Boyd, who is a senior partner with Winthrop and Weinstein. So the people who are in the American Law Institute are elected by the Institute. Membership is rather limited. I think we had two people from Minnesota elected this last time. The elections are every 2 years. So it's the council who makes the determination. It's not easy to get in.
Madam Chair, follow-up?
Representative Howe.
So what is that number of people?
Madam Chair and Representative, it's a little less than 2,000 total. 68 of the members of the American Law Institute are from the state of Minnesota. And when we deliberate, the next meeting will be May 22nd through 24th in Washington, D.C. Membership is usually addressed by, well, this year it'll be Associate Justice Ginsburg, and we deliberate on all aspects of the various restatements, and there are a number of them. They come before the body repeatedly. It would be like you considering a bill every year for 6, 7, 8 years. It's a torturous process, and ultimately the restatement has to be approved by the full membership. Usually there are about 700 to 800 people in the annual meeting. So it's a very, very careful and deliberative process.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and that just goes to prove my point. It's a very limited amount of people that make this decision to change, to formulate that law and try to get legislatures to adopt that, and that was my point. The other question I have, Madam Chair, goes to Mr. Carlson, and you made a statement about control. And as far as, and I've got a limited knowledge of the law, I'll be the first to admit that. Most of that comes from participating in it on the other side of the deal. But when you talk control, as far as, don't you have to have a legal right to that property in order to have control of the property? Because otherwise, you are trespass, and you don't have legal right to that property. You have, as far as I know, you need to pay taxes, you need to have control over that property in order to have a right to it.
Mr. Carlson.
Madam Chair and Representative Howe, you kind of helped make my point. I don't know what that sentence means in this context. And you may think that I have to have some legal right or interest, but that's not what the words say. The word says a person in control of the land. It doesn't say a legal interest. It doesn't say a permit. It just says a person in control of the land. And what does that mean? And, Madam Chair, just, hopefully last time I have to speak. But I don't ascribe Representative Fabian's motives to this ALEC bill, because I genuinely believe that that was not his motivation and that that's not something he was aware of at all. So I don't ascribe that to Representative Fabian. But I really worry about freezing the law in an area where four-year-olds have to know of the dangers of drowning. And that's the consequence of this bill that we just don't really understand.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, as a as a code enforcement individual, and I write orders on people in control of property every day. And so my definition of the realm that I enforce code and that part of those rules that have been brought up through the laws that have been brought up through the rulemaking process, I write the orders to correct, or the orders of condemnation to those in control of that property and have legal right to it. So I guess that's where my definition comes from, is that. Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hugh.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Fabian, for bringing this bill. I really appreciate and empathize with your concern for property owners. In fact, as I was learning more, Madam Chair, about this, I had never given consideration about what we were going to be talking about. So I've really listened and asked a lot of questions. I began to become concerned about property that my husband and I own, and just wondering if there might be, you know, liability. So I'm certain, I actually don't have a question, Madam Chair, but I just wanted to make a comment about, on the record, about what Mr. Carlson said, that the folks on this list probably don't have a clue about, you know, what we're talking about in this specific legislation. I would really beg to differ. I would challenge that. In fact, I reject that. But I do believe that if every entity on this list would listen to what Mr. Johnson said explaining this, they would become really clear about this. And, you know, we all have a responsibility as members to be educating our electorate. How many of our constituents understand the intricacies and ins and outs of what we consider? But the explanation that was made by Mr. Johnson, in the face of, you know, what can happen, what possible concerns property owners might have, that was brought to the testifier table by Mr. Hamilton, were wonderful. And so I would encourage you to ensure that Representative Fabian, that, you know, the members of this, and maybe through Mr. Johnson listed here, you know, are aware of what we're talking about, and I absolutely believe that they would support even more so this legislation that you're bringing forward. So I greatly appreciate your having brought this bill.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm not a lawyer. I'm understanding just a little bit of this, and quite frankly, I arrived a little late, so I'm probably out of line for some of these questions. I don't know what flagrant trespassing is. I believe I would know what intentional trespassing is, but I don't know what flagrant is. And I'm wondering, you know, would an individual who has Alzheimer's or mental illness that wandered onto a property and was injured, clearly they're trespassing. I would say they weren't intentionally trespassing, but could that be defined as flagrant trespassing? And I'm also really curious because Professor Steenson, you had talked about flexibility in the law, and I get a sense that this bill closes off flexibility. So if you could just sort of speak to those two issues, I'd appreciate it. It might help me understand a little bit more what this bill is trying to do.
Professor Steenson.
All right, Madam Chair, Representative Dean. First, as to the flagrant trespasser issue, assuming that we would get to the point where the Minnesota Supreme Court would be asked by lawyer for an injured person to adopt, first, it would have to be Section 51 of the Restatement, third of torts, which says there's a duty of due care owed to anybody on property, including trespassers. That would be a significant change in Minnesota law, but assuming the court did that, then the court would also likely adopt Section 52 of the third restatement, which says flagrant trespassers don't get to recover. The restatement does not define that term on purpose. This was a subject of a substantial amount of discussion over the years. It's pretty clear from the commentary, which is also influential in the restatement, it's pretty clear from the commentary that at its base, flagrant trespasser would include people who come on property for purposes of committing a crime. I think it's also equally clear that in your hypothetical situation where somebody with Alzheimer's wanders on to somebody's property, it's clear that person has, in fact, committed a trespass and could be civilly liable. Trespass doesn't require intent. You just have to be someplace where you don't have a right to be. That person would be subject to the general rules of reasonable care. But one thing that we're forgetting here is the kind of care. I mean, there's certainly a concern about potential liability that landowners have. But the kind of care that you take with respect to your property, if you live in a residential area, is the kind of care that's going to protect you from liability, whether the person is invited onto your property or happens to be a trespasser. If you use reasonable care to cover up the hole that you dug because you're putting in a new garden, then that's going to protect you from liability against entrance on land, and it's going to protect you from liability against any trespasser if you use reasonable care. Reasonableness is really at the root of common law liability, and you're never going to be, and you couldn't legislate, I don't believe. Well, you could. You could simply say no entrant has a right to recover for any injury sustained on real property. That's not likely to happen. But the essence is reasonable care, and it's impossible to define it further. We're not really able to do that in automobile accident cases. We can't really do it in cases involving owners and occupiers' duties.
Representing.
Follow up. Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm sitting here and I'm thinking I have homeowner's insurance to protect me from having to have the personal burden financially should accidents or things happen on my property. So does this mean that I'll no longer have to have that type of insurance for my home, because I can't really be sued for something unless I really do something intentional? Then I, you know, would have no need for that. I mean, am I interpreting this the right way, or am I totally wacko?
Professor Stevenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Dean, you're always going to need homeowners insurance. There's always...
Just to be clear, I'm talking about liability insurance for
liability
people being injured.
Sure. Okay. Homeowners liability insurance covers you for any sums you're legally obligated to pay somebody else. It doesn't, by the way, cover you for intentional injury. No intentional injuries. I'll just leave it at that. But you always want to maintain liability insurance because of the possibility that maybe you are going to do something wrong. Maybe your kid leaves some obstruction on the sidewalk leading up to your house and it's dark and somebody trips and falls on it when they're coming to your birthday party. So you're always going to need liability insurance. And there's really no bill, short of eliminating homeowners' liability completely, I guess, that would alleviate the need for you to have insurance coverage.
Representative Lunan, and then Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. First of all, to some of the examples that got brought up regarding the four-year-old, I believe if all of us in this room were in a civil case jury, you aren't going to assign negligence to the four-year-old. I believe there's a term called competent parties. For some reason, I saw once where I think you have to be 13 years old to commit an intentional act. I can't remember exactly how that's worded. But there's comparative negligence where a percentage of negligence is assigned to all the involved parties. And the primary negligence is going to fall to the adult, the competent party, who was responsible for that four-year-old. So that example is a little disingenuous. To the front door example in the dilapidated house, I also believe that a front door is an invite. And that if someone goes to the property, they walk up to that front door, and any property owner owes safe passage on that sidewalk. Now, if I forego that and walk across the front yard and look in a window, I think the duty level is different. My question is to the to Representative Fabian, though. We've heard a lot of what ifs, and we've heard often that the current law right now, as it stands, is doing a good job. Does your bill change current law at all?
Representative Fabian.
Chair. Representative Lunan, no.
Representative Lunan? Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have two questions related to the two examples that you gave. First is the case of the four-year-old that's pending. If passing this bill if this becomes law, what impact would that have on that pending case with the four-year-old? And then the second question that I have is, you told a story about how there was a case law that said, you know, if someone comes onto your property, if it's an attractive nuisance, you're responsible, but the court backed away from that and said, no, you have to have, you only have that liability if they're, you know, they're going to that specific spot. If this law became, if this bill became the law, would that keep the court from backing away from that liability in that recreational setting? So if they wanted to give more protections to landowners, does this preclude the court from giving more protection to landowners as well?
Professor Steenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom. In response to your first question, this bill would in no way change the issues before the Supreme Court in the case involving the near drowning of the four-year-old, Snogles versus Carlson. Now, recovery was barred in that particular case, by the way, because the Court of Appeals held that the danger was obvious to a four-year-old. Children can, in fact, be held liable for negligence, although there's going to be a certain cutoff. Actually, the restatement of torts, Section 10 of the third restatement, says children under the age of five are presumed incapable of negligence, but that doesn't mean that a danger can't be obvious and that the child would be barred because the danger is obvious. The issues before the court in Snogles involve that provision of the restatement. It's actually Section 343B of the second restatement of torts. And the Supreme Court's going to have to decide whether that trespasser provision applies equally to this little four-year-old kid who almost drowned in the Mississippi River. Would have no impact on that. Plus, the effective date of the bill, it applies only to cases rising on or after July 1st, the date of passage. Now, the second question concerns a court's ability to back away from the restatement. All right, now that's an interesting question. If the law is frozen, well, let's assume the law had been frozen prior to the time the Minnesota Supreme Court caught this case, Croaker, C-R-O-A-K-E-R versus Mackenhausen. It's a case where some resort owners had a an abandoned van. Next to the van was a garage with a hole in it. Some kids got into it, pulled some gas out. They made a Molotov cocktail, and it blew up and caused terribly serious injuries. The plaintiffs had a real shot at recovering under the provisions of the second restatement of torts dealing with trespassing children. But the Minnesota Supreme Court, granting recovery to the defendant resort owners in that particular case, said, you know, it's not enough to know that the landowner, for the landowner to know that kids are playing on the property. They've got to know that kids are going to be in the specific place where the injury occurred, crawling through that hole inside the garage. All right, now that was a modification of the second restatement of torts, and it precluded recovery. This bill would bar that result.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So let's just put that on the record for everybody to hear. This would also preclude the court from giving landowners more protection that the legislature has not granted. Is that correct?
Professor Steenson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, that is correct, yes.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I have Mr. Johnson come down for a question related to that?
Sure. Mr. Johnson.
And I just ask for a roll call.
You bet. Roll call has been requested. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Mr. Johnson, is it your intention to freeze it both ways so you don't want the court to be able to give landowners any more protection than they currently have under current law?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Hillstrom, it's our intention to do what the words of House File 985 specifically provide. I said it's the narrow instance where we're codifying that an owner of real property does owes no duty of care to trespasser, except in those instances that I delineated some of them where there is a duty of care today. That's what this bill does. I was trying to track through what Professor Steenson was saying, and in particular, everything I know about tort law, I learned from Professor Steenson when I was in his class at William Mitchell Law School a number of years ago. So that's all this bill does. It's a narrow, focused bill. We are not tying the court's hands. beyond the specific wording, this is all the law that's going to be if it's passed. And so the wording of this law is all that will be impacted. So in my opinion, I don't see it limiting the court's actions in any regard to landowners' rights except for this instance, which is intended to address, as I indicated, the Section 51 of the Restatement of Torts that broadens the recommendation for this much broader duty of care to all entrants on the land except including trespassers.
Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But you heard Mr. Steenson, Professor Steenson, state that if the court wanted to give more protection to a landowner from trespassers, that they would be precluded from doing that as well.
Mr. Johnson.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Hellstrom, I mean, I know he said those words and answered that question. I guess I'd like to know what would be fact circumstances that could pose itself to the court that might come about. I don't see that happening that way, so I guess I tell you I don't know that I agree with that statement.
Lawyers disagree, not with each other.
So it's speculation about what might happen. If this is law, this is the law of Minnesota, and these are the only words that would be before the court. If there were a case that in some way, shape, or form this were impacted by, but I don't see it precluding the court from taking action that's not affected by these words.
Representative Hellstrom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm done asking you questions, but I'm just going to make a statement. I think it's interesting because this whole bill is based on speculation and based on facts that might happen, that might cause the court to want to do this, and so your argument against my argument saying that you're actually freezing it and making it so that the court can't give landowners more protection is speculation. So, members, I just think you have to be really careful when you're freezing the law and you're tying the court's hands, because what you might very well be doing is you may be saying to landowners, you only get the protections that you have right now, and we have not foreseen those other circumstances that might come up that we might think that you are entitled to protection, but we don't usually make the law retroactive. And so when we come back to fix the mistake, should this become law, you will have whoever was harmed, whatever landowner was harmed, will not be able to get redressed because we don't usually interfere in cases and we don't usually make laws retroactive here.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To Representative Fabian, I'm just trying to make sense of the bill in a very practical way. So in a practical sense, I'm trying to figure out what is the problem you're trying to solve and the kind of case you would hope this legislation would affect in a very practical way. So I have my head wrapped around the purpose of the bill. And usually we bring legislation forward that's going to make things better, but I need to understand practically what is the problem you're hoping to solve and an example of how that would play out as you see it.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, my motivation for doing this is to give property owners protection from what I would call frivolous lawsuits. And I think it's safe to say that we hear of or read about what we people in Northwest Minnesota would call frivolous lawsuits. And in any case where a case is brought forward, you're going to be required to protect yourself, by hiring an attorney and those sorts of things. And I just want to give more protection to landowners, the people that I know in my district that own property, whether they're resorts, their bowling alley was mentioned, farmers, those types of. That's the real application for me.
Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know your motivation, Representative Fabian. I know you're a solid guy and so forth. But again, can you give me an example of a case where you think this would apply or a situation? Because just hearing from the other testifiers, I didn't get a sense this would have the impact perhaps that you're thinking. But
Representative Fabian.
Can you give me an example of a case?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Johnson, I guess the one that comes to mind is the one that my friend, the CPA, talked to me about.
He said that if you arrange your property as an LLC or whatever it was, then the likelihood that somebody's going to come after you because they were on your property and somebody was climbing on a piece of your farm equipment and they fell off and broke their leg, the chances of that, and I don't know how all this ties into all these things. You know, the attorneys kind of figure some of this stuff out. But I want the people to know that that the likelihood of some sort of a lawsuit coming against them is diminished because this law is being passed and put into law, or is being signed into law, is to reduce those. And as far as the specific, you know, I heard Representative Lesch talk about swimming pools. Well, I have friends in my neighborhood, they don't have a swimming pool that's in the ground, but they have one that's above the ground. Minnesota law, according to Representative Lesch, requires that you have a fence around a swimming pool. Does that also happen for above-ground swimming pools that are so common today? You know, I don't know, but I'm trying to give some protection to those people who have those things. We're just trying to be good parents and so forth, to provide some recreational opportunities for their kids. And horribly, tragically, some bad things do happen. And it's not because anybody's intentionally doing things, but... You know, I want to try to look out for the landowners, the property owners.
Thank you, Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fabian, I think this just kind of gets to the point where this is where the bill fails to mention what those immunities and defenses are. You know, who do they apply to, and what do we mean by these terms and how they are applied to individuals? I think this kind of gets at the summary of the conversation that we've had today, is that we don't know, and I think there's just an honest misinterpretation and mischaracterization of the statement of third of torts that seems to imply that there's this increased risk to landowners in terms of the liability, and it's just not true based on the testimony we heard today. So With that kind of blatant failure to mention where these immunities and defenses are applied, I just can't see supporting this bill.
All right. Representative Lesch.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I was wondering, now that Mr. Johnson's back up here at testifier's table, maybe he could answer Representative Johnson's question as to what was the injustice that has occurred in Minnesota, or I'm assuming injustice is, presuming if you bring an entire bill that there is more than one circumstance this has happened, that would be alleviated, a lawsuit, a frivolous lawsuit that would not have happened under this bill?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, perhaps we can go back to the start and just make it clear again why the bill is here.
Well, that's what I'm asking.
I'll answer the question again. Why the bill is here is because current Minnesota law in this area is solid. So we don't have objections to current Minnesota law regarding the liability of landowners to trespassers. But I said at the get-go, the purpose of the bill, as a number of states have done, in response to the newest edition of the restatement of torts, third edition, in response to that and worrying about their Supreme Court changing the common law, what the case law has been cited through the decades. So I am not here to bring a series of injustices to say we've got to deal with this. I'm here to say, and I said, this is a unique bill. I've been around a lot of legislation dealing with the civil justice system in Minnesota through the years. But it's a unique bill in the multitude of states, and states are still passing this in near unanimous votes in their House and Senate and adopting it into law. So we're trying to keep the current law in Minnesota to prevent the injustices. And what could those injustices be? People coming on your property who are not supposed to be there. And whether it's falling off farm equipment, climbing a tree, stepping in a hole, slipping on something, and then being injured, and then filing a lawsuit against the homeowner or the farmer or the property owner, That's why the bill's here. So I'm not here to give you a listing of all of these terrible things that happened. I'm here to say, let's make sure those terrible things don't happen. And the last statement on that, to Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, and I won't go into the ALEC and replay the some of the debates on that. It's the, and the Minnesotans for Lawsuit Reform, but we'll pass on that for the time being. Is that that's why groups like the Farmers Union support this. That's why groups like the Farm Bureau support this. That's why groups like the Minnesota Agri-Growth Council support this. The timber industry supports this. You can ask them. They know what they're doing. They're not being hoodwinked by Bob Johnson on this bill. They are speaking on behalf of their members and the realtors and the bankers. Talk to them. Ask them if they know what this is. They actually know what it is. And they don't want Minnesota law to stray off the rails where it is right now, and it's solid now, as one state Supreme Court has done, as I indicated, out in Nevada, and they changed their common law and found a duty of care to trespassers, and that's going to cost property owners money. Whether they get sued or not, if they know there's a duty of care, then you better take actions to deal with whatever those bad results could be, because you can now be found liable to somebody who's not supposed to be there. So that's why the bill's here, Madam Chair.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Ms. Johnson, I appreciate that, but I heard your answer, and it was that there wasn't a single instance that you're trying to cure. Not one. There's the boogeyman that was brought up, that someone climbs on your tractor and falls off, and then you're going to get a letter from a lawyer and pay out. It doesn't happen, Representative Fabian. It doesn't happen. It's not going to happen. And I realize the boogeyman's still out there. But let me ask you this. In light of your answer that strayed from the question, Mr. Johnson, now this area of law, you said, that's been developed over centuries from medieval England. We got to the point where on Valentine's Day 2014 at 9:32 a.m., we've hit the perfect time where over centuries and centuries of development, now the law is perfect. There's no need for any other changes. Why is it that over hundreds and hundreds of years of legal development, where jurists considered the changing conditions of the law and facts, why is it that now, at this precise moment in time, the law is completely perfect and you want to freeze it?
Mr. Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, I don't know if you want me to hear my answer again. I didn't say hundreds of years. I said the many years of Minnesota case law. Don't know that our common law goes back to as far back as you said. My comment is that the case law on this issue is solid, and we want to keep it there. Why is now the time? Because, frankly, a large group of people around this country, including many, many, many state legislatures, have concluded the American Law Institute was wrong. They were wrong. That's why this is the time, and it's not just now. If you look at the map, legislatures have been acting on this over the last 7 years, or since it was adopted, 2010. So that's why. The reason is that the American Law Institute, and it is a highly respected group, and there are a lot of very intelligent judges and law professors and practitioners, they're wrong on Section 51 and the recommendation that there is a duty of care to a broader class of peoples than the Restatement of Torts second and first edition did not make that recommendation. So they concluded wrong, and so a lot of people and a lot of interest groups have said we got to change that. We don't want our state to stray into a new area on this specific point and find that there's a duty of care with the costs on property owners that are going to go with that duty of care and with the exposure of lawsuits that then is opened up to them.
Okay. Well, Madam Chair, if I can just make a statement. I can assure you, Mr. Johnson, that the common law does go back that far. And in fact, I didn't learn property law from Professor Steenson like you did. I learned it from Len Biernat, who was actually a member here when I first got elected, and I learned from Hamlin. And one of the first things you learn in property is the development of the common law on property is specific to trespassers. Some of the oldest cases go back regarding trespass, regarding property. So the law that we've developed on that does go back to medieval England and is, in fact, that old. And I will tell you this, that this is the first time there's been an attempt to say all this discussion has gone on about the law, and now it's time to stop. In fact, there was an emperor of Rome called Justinian, who they had the Codex of Laws, where they codified everything. And then they had a complete separate set of codices, or set of books, that were interpretations of case law in the 6th century A.D. And they decided at the time, you know what? We've had enough law at this time. There's just too many case decisions. There's no way that we're going to get another situation that could change our interpretation based on new technologies or new developments or new situations, so we're just going to stop. That lasted a very short period of time where they realized we can't do that. The law needs to be flexible and fluid and make decisions based on circumstances, because that's how you arrive at justice, not deciding we're the legislature. We know every situation could happen in the future of civilization, and therefore we're going to freeze it into law right now. That doesn't work, and eventually you make mistakes. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
A roll call has been requested. Representative Lunan renews his motion that House File 985 be recommended to pass and re-refer to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Scott.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Lesh.
No.
Representative Carlson.
No.
Representative Dean.
No.
Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Howell.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Lunan.
Aye.
Representative Lucero.
Yes.
Representative Omar.
No.
Representative O'Neill. Representative Pugh.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative Whalen.
Aye.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith. Representative Smith, the motion would be for House File 787 be recommended that it be referred to the Ag Policy Committee. Is that your motion?
Yes, Madam Chair, it is.
All right, thank you. House File 787 is before us. To your bill, Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 787 deals with the obligation for veterinarians to report when they see animal abuse. Right now, they currently have that obligation to report, and this bill simply gives them immunity for said reporting. I have Mr. Brian Lake with me today to provide some additional detail, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith. Mr. Lake, please introduce yourself for the tape and go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Lake, I have a solid practice law firm, and today I'm representing Animal Folks Minnesota. Animal Folks is a nonprofit organization that provides a lot of training and educational material for law enforcement and for veterinarians. And in the course of that work, they've identified a bit of a gap in the law. Now, under current Minnesota statute and rule, veterinarians are required to report instances of animal cruelty. And this is important just beyond animal welfare. It's really a public safety issue. The law enforcement community is very well aware that when someone is committing violent acts against animals, there's a high probability that violent behavior will also manifest itself against human beings. There's a well-known link between abuse of animals and abuse of children, elders, and spouses. So it's an important thing to track. Reporting provisions are quite common throughout the country. We've counted 34 other states that have some sort of mandatory or voluntary reporting mandate for veterinarians. Where Minnesota is a little unique is that we're a bit of an outlier. We're one of only five states that does not have an accompanying immunity protection. So the basic idea in the states that have the immunity protection is someone should not be getting sued for something the state is requiring them to do, and that's what we're trying to address here. And this is very common. This immunity provisions are very common across the political spectrum. You'll find them in blue states like Massachusetts, Oregon, California. You also find them in red states like North Dakota, Nebraska, and Texas. They're also very common in other contexts for other types of mandated reporters under Minnesota law. Various health professionals and others are given immunity protection when they report things like maltreatment of minors. So it's a pretty mainstream idea both nationally and here in Minnesota. I do want to note, Madam Chair, a few things about the bill. Well, number one, we're happy to have the support of the Board of Veterinary Medicine and also the Minnesota Association for Justice. Specifically on the language, Madam Chair, I want to make sure the committee is aware that we're not changing any type of definitions for animal cruelty or animal abuse. Those are staying what they are in current law. We're also not adding any additional requirements or standards for veterinarians when they're making these reports. We're simply providing the immunity when they do. Also want to note that the language has a good faith requirement. The immunity only attaches when the veterinarian makes the report in good faith. So we're not barring the door to the courthouse to any animal owner in any situation. And I do want to note also that the good faith standard is what is used in the other Minnesota statutes to provide immunity for mandated reporters. And it's the common standard that's used in vet immunity statutes in other states. And then finally, Madam Chair, and I know we're too late to meet the 24-hour rule to deal with this today, but it kind of rose up over the weekend that we had inadvertently omitted on some language that's important to add. And I do want to make the committee aware of that. We potentially would want to make this change at the next committee stop and act policy, or potentially, Madam Chair, if you're open to it today as a technical amendment. We omitted to include language about who the report would be made to. So what we are planning to do, what we'd like to do, is in line 1.7, after reporting, we would add to peace officers, humane agents, and animal control officers. And the reasons those three would be specified is those are the three designated entities in statute that receive animal cruelty reports and make investigations. So happy to handle that however you prefer, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Lake. Representative Lesh, I don't know if you heard that request for a technical amendment. It doesn't meet the 24-hour rule. They can certainly amend it in the next committee, which is Ag Policy. And what it would do is on line 1.7 after the word reporting, it would just lay out who the reporting would be given to. And if or Mr. Lake, would you want to repeat those entities?
Sure. It would be line 1.7 after reporting. We would add in to peace officers, humane agents, or animal control officers. And again, the reason for specifying those three is those are the three types of entities in statute right now that are designated to receive animal cruelty reports and make investigations.
Thank you for that explanation, Madam Chair. No objection to that as an oral amendment, at least for me.
Okay. Anyone else in the room object to that? All right, very good. We will move that oral amendment. Do we need to have it repeated by staff or anything? No? Okay. I think it's on the record. So all those in favor of adopting this oral amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Any questions to the testifier or the bill's author on this bill? Thank you very much. Representative, is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill for or against? Very good. Representative Smith renews his motion that House File 787 be re-referred to the Committee on Agriculture Policy. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion is adopted. You're on your way to Ag Policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Lesh.
Thank you. Before you adjourn, I had a question for you about the minutes from last, from the...
Sure, Representative Lesh.
February 9th, specifically with respect to House File 389. And I want to be sure I understand what your suggestion is that you believe happened on that bill. As 324. On that bill, it's our understanding that that bill remains in committee and is going to be taken up. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
With that, folks, we are adjourned.